This podcast on the impact of the AFTA on the commercial vehicle industry is brought to you by Supercool, engineered for safety.
Good morning, everyone. I would like to welcome all the members of the media in particular. I'm very grateful for you to be here today to make time to join us for this round table. Okay, it's not a round table, but we're going to have a good discussion going. What we're going to do today is we are going to discuss the ASEAN Free Trade Agreement and the ASEAN Economic Community in view of its impact for the commercial vehicle industry. We've got quite a few speakers here, which I'll be introducing as and when we're going to address questions to them. We're going to have two sessions, moderated sessions, and we will have questions and answers at the end of each session so that if we haven't addressed any particular concern or question that the media has, we can then direct them to the right people. To begin with, I would like to call upon Mr. Ravidran, who is the Senior Director of ASEAN Economic Cooperation Division from MITI. Yep, your presentation is ready. Yeah, so you just...
I go there.
Yes.
Okay, very good morning, Mr. Stefan and distinguished panel members, Mr. Ruslan and Mr. Tai, and I just had a good chat with Mr. Billy earlier today. Let me, by the way, first say that, give you a brief overview of what's really happening. We no longer use the word ASEAN Free Trade Area. That's quite clear. We used the term ASEAN Economic Community 2015. Now, the announcement of the establishment of the ASEAN Economic Community will be made sometime in November of this year when Malaysia, in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur. As many of you know that 2015, Malaysia is the chair of ASEAN. Basically, chairman of ASEAN or chair of ASEAN. Our PM is the chair of ASEAN. You know, to be chair of ASEAN is rotated among the 10 ASEAN member countries. Last year, the chair of ASEAN was Myanmar, and this year, the chair of ASEAN is Malaysia, and next year, the chair of ASEAN will be Lao PDR. It's done on a rotation. So that's what basically ASEAN is all about. Now, ASEAN is made of 10 countries. I'm not trying to educate you this morning, but, you know, sometimes when I go around and ask people, do you know ASEAN? And they will get very confused because today the forum is about Asian truckers, A-S-I-N. There's a difference. Asia is the whole of Asia. Asia is made of Central Asia, South Asia, Northeast Asia, West Asia and all that. And that's got about 100 or 50, 60 countries there. But ASEAN is basically 10 member states. We are trying to form a community, not just the economic community, a community. When you say a community, we have three pillars. Basically, we have the political security, the economic, and the social cultural. All these three pillars make up the ASEAN community. So it's not just economic community, but we're also talking about a community of people, of 620 million people in Southeast Asia, basically Southeast Asia. We are forming a community. Why do we need to form a community? Now, if you look, if you go back to 1967 or early years, you find that we started forming ASA, Association of South Asian Nations, and so on and so forth, but that did not really materialize. And you know, Southeast Asia was in turbulence. I would rather not say anything else, but just say turbulence in the early years. We had the rise of communism, we had the war, and so on and so forth. So we formed ASEAN in order to bring about political stability, bringing all the 10 countries together, political stability, as well as economic growth, and to improve the well-being of the people of Southeast Asia. That's basically what ASEAN is all about. Now, today, I know I've been given about 10 minutes to make my presentation. Let me just run through what the ASEAN Economic Community is about. In reality, ASEAN Economic Community 2015, you're expecting that many of you guys think that come 31st December, 2015, this year, when we say we are an ASEAN Economic Community, please do not compare us with the integration of the European Union. They have taken 50 years to integrate. They are far ahead of us. For us, ASEAN Economic Community 2015 is a journey. This is just the start of the journey. It will take us another 30 years, perhaps 20, depending on the global economic situation, before we can become truly integrated, like the European Union. So you guys have to make that fundamental difference, because you are the business people on this side, you are the media, you must make this difference. You know, many of you think that come 2015, yeah, we are already in 2015, end of this year, that we will announce the formation of economic community. But this is a journey. Believe me, this is a journey. It is not the complete deadline. You know, you can retire at 50, 55, 60, you can say I retire and then the clock stops. But for economic integration, there is no timeline. It is a journey, it is progressive integration, you have to continue deepening economic integration. And that you have to do. So in my slide, I'm saying to you today is the ASEAN Economic Community requires the removal of barriers to trade in goods, services, investment, movement of capital, labor. Labor, I bracketed skill. In the European Union, you talk about skill, labor is free movement, but in ASEAN, you can't move. You guys want to go to Indonesia or anywhere, you can't just simply move around, you know, and work. For example, if you're in the media and you want to join the Java Post, for example, you just can't cross over and work for Java Post. You need to go through a lot of formalities. But in the European Union, you can just move across. So that's why I'm saying it's complete free movement in the European Union, but in the case of ASEAN, it is not. But this is our objective, to remove barriers, to harmonize rules and regulations and standards and so on and so forth. Basically, the main goal is to remove to the maximum extent possible barriers within the region to facilitate trade economic activities. This is to allow the businesses to operate in a competitive environment and allows firms to benefit from economic scale. This is the objective. When are we going to achieve this objective? It is not in 2015. Believe me, today, I'm very frank, I'm saying to the media today, it's not going to happen in 2015 because it's a journey. Complete removal of barriers to trade will take a long time. It will take us 10, 20 years, 30 years. I'm not sure. It depends on the economic situation. Now, just to highlight to you, ASEAN was formed in 1967. We had the ASEAN Preferential Trading Arrangement in 1977. So we started the process way back, even before some of you were born. At least I was born then, you know. So you guys, many of you look very young. Maybe Billy and I were born probably. So many of you were not even born. So we started the process in 1967. We agreed to form ASEAN. In 1977, we agreed to form ASEAN Preferential Trading Arrangement. What do you mean by preferential trading arrangement was that we wanted to reduce import duties. Basically, when you import a product from overseas or from any ASEAN countries, for example, from Indonesia into Malaysia, believe me, those days we used to have import duties like 300%, 400%. That means you buy a product for 10 ringgit, you have to pay to the custom 300% import duty, you know. So the product might be 10, but the import duty may make the product something like 300 ringgit. So that's the kind of duties we had. So we started saying, you know, if you want to promote trade within the region, the 10 countries, you want to expand, you want to grow businesses in the region, we wanted to reduce import duties. So we started with the ASEAN PTA, we call it Preferential Trading Arrangement. Then what we did, we selected the most important export products within the region, 500, 600, 1,000. So we said that 500 or 600, we agreed to reduce. Even that, we did not remove the import duties. And we said 50% margin of preference. Basically, if the import duty is 100%, 50% margin of preference means the import duty comes to 50%. So we started in a very small way. Then we realized it was not happening. Then we decided in 1992, it was a very bold decision by the leaders in 1992. Overnight, I believe, overnight they decided, hey, given European Union was expanding, they were forming a fortress in Europe. North American free trade was becoming a reality. So the leaders in ASEAN decided, in 1992, they woke up and said, look, let's form an ASEAN free trade area. So in 1992, yes, it was called the ASEAN free trade area. Basically, we decided that within 15 years, we will remove all import duties. 300, 400%, the import duties will come to zero. So we started with that objective. In 1998, the economic crisis, the leaders said, look, there should not be turning back. There's no turn back. Let's move forward. Let's be bold. And he decided to advance the timeline to 2003, basically to remove all import duties by 2003 to 5% and 2010 complete zero. So right now, that's what the dates are there. Very important for you to remember that it is integration is a progressive step. Basically, what I'm saying is that it's not going to happen overnight. It will take us a long time. So we decided in 1992 to form the free trade area, remove import duties. In 1995, we said, hey, why only goods? What about the services sector, logistics, transport, banking, education, healthcare? All these are services. How do we liberalize? In those days, if you want to invest in Malaysia, a foreigner wants to invest in Malaysia, he has to have, he can only own 10%, 20%, 30%. Today, we have allowed 100% foreign ownership. Similarly, Malaysian companies that are going into Myanmar or Thailand or Philippines, we can now own 100%. But those days, if you are a businessman, if you want to invest in the healthcare system, for example, we don't allow 100% foreign ownership. It's always, we had the Foreign Investment Committee guidelines, and the ownership was restricted. Foreigners can only come in and invest 10, 20%, you know, the rest will have to be they have to look for a Malaysian partner. So we have the AFAS, and we decided that 128 services subsectors will completely liberalized, including logistics, so that we can promote a free, complete free business environment in Southeast Asia. Then in 1998, we had the ASEAN Investment Agreement. So we moved slowly. But then again, in 2003, the leaders were thinking, you know, why are we doing on incremental step-by-step? First goods, services, then investment. So we decided, let's have a comprehensive blueprint. And that blueprint came into reality in 2007. In November 2007, the leaders accepted the ASEAN Economic Community Blueprint. And from then on, we used the term ASEAN Economic Community because we want to move towards economic community, not a free trade area. When you talk about free trade area, basically you are just referring to removal of import duties. So we started in 2007, and then I will tell you what's the next now. What has been achieved since 1992? Ladies and gentlemen, from the media and my colleagues on the panel, 99.65% of the import duties have been completely eliminated. Basically, 100% duty-free. It's a duty-free market. Southeast Asia today is a duty-free market. You can import any product from Thailand into Malaysia or Indonesia into Malaysia or vice versa. There's no duty. The import duty is zero. Basically, we have removed. What about Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar, and Vietnam? Now, these are developing countries. They said they need a little bit more time. Basically, they have again removed 93%. For the 7%, they said give us a little flexibility, 1 January 2018. So about 600 products for Cambodia, for Laos, each 600 products, the import duty will only be eliminated on 1 January 2018. So 7%. Now, removing import duties is a very important first step. Then people say you can have import duty at zero. What about licensing? If I can remove my duty, but I subject the product, for example, to approved permit or import licensing, then it negates the reduction of duty because then it's the government's decide whether I want to allow the product to come in or not to come in. So I subject the product to import license. So we said we shouldn't have non-tariff barriers. So besides tariff, we said even non-tariff barriers should be removed. Meaning that you guys here on this table, if you want to bring a product from Thailand, you should just be able to import. You're exporter that side. You are the importer this side. You should be able to import without any restrictions, basically. Other than, of course, when I say removal or NTBs, other than for safety, health reasons, of course, we have the SPS. You have to comply with those anywhere in the world. Any free trade agreement, you still have to comply with the rules and regulation for health and safety. Terms of product for Malaysia, almost all are zero, except for alcoholic beverages. We have not included into the ASEAN preferential trade agreement. The duties are very high, but work is in progress. We are trying to see, find ways to adjust to that. Now, okay, next slide, please. Services. We agreed that services liberalization, 128 services sector will be liberalized. When you do liberalization of services sector, mode 1 and mode 2 is not an issue. Mode 1 means delivery of services via ICT. Of course, there are some regulations to govern that. For example, if you want to go and get medical treatment in Thailand, you are free to go. But the most important is establishment of companies or branch office in the host country. Here, we have removed equity. In ASEAN, for example, in Malaysia, I would say that today we are quite liberal, very liberal, in fact, that we have no longer equity restriction. An ASEAN company can come and operate in Malaysia. They can own 100%. I will give an example, but please don't... I say some of the hotels in Malaysia today are not owned by Malaysians. They're actually owned by foreigners, Indonesians particularly. For example, St. Regis. You take St. Regis, you take Intercon, you take Melia, you take Sheraton. They are not really 100% owned by Malaysians, you know. They're actually owned by Indonesians. The Indonesians have come and invest. Why are they coming? The question you have to ask is, why are they coming and investing? Because we allow them to invest. We have removed the restriction. Similarly, Malaysians have now gone into Thailand. For example, Indonesia, CIMB Bank, Maybank, Sharia, Maybank, the main Maybank, they're all operating in Indonesia. All the plantations in Indonesia are owned by Malaysians. If you look at manufacturing companies in Thailand, quite a few are 100% Malaysian owned. So this is what the ASEAN Economic Communities is all about. It's about removing import duties. It's about liberalizing the equity conditions for goods and services. Next, please. Now, in terms of services, what has it been achieved? Of course, as I said, by end of this year, we will completely remove. The ideal is to remove completely all restriction to trade in services. But as I said, it is a progressive approach. We need to take care of domestic sensitivities so that it is done in, you know, we don't want to upset our domestic service providers. You know, for example, today you're talking about truck, our lorry operators, are they really competitive? Can they compete with Thailand? This is a question we have to ask. So we have to do it progressively to ensure that we build competitiveness in our domestic industry so that they can meet competition. So it's going to take us some time, but for the moment, we are doing 10th, the final package by August, basically talking about removing equity. There are still domestic regulations which we have to look at, and domestic regulations can be sometimes very restrictive. My friend here is nodding his head. I think he knows what I'm talking about. For example, if you want to say, you know, a doctor from Thailand, can he come and just work? The answer is no. He has to follow domestic regulations. He has to be registered with Malaysian Medical Association. We have to certify that he is actually a doctor and not a nurse. You know, things like that. So the domestic regulations is still in place. Next. Investments, yes. What do you mean by investments? Basically, you can go and invest in any part of Southeast Asia, all the 10 ASEAN countries. The question is, next slide, please. The question is your investment protected? For example, Venezuela, when Chavez was there, he decided to nationalize the oil companies. We can't do that. If you are investing in Thailand or Indonesia, the Thai government or Indonesian government just can't take over your investment. If they do that, then they have to pay you compensation. So our investments are protected. All forms of investments are protected. If you invest in Myanmar today, the government just can't wake up one morning and say that, you know, they want to change the regulation. But they can't do it. Because if they do it and it affects your investments, then you can take the government to dispute. Basically, there are provisions in ASEAN, you know, in ASEAN Charter, the ASEAN Economic Dispute Settlement Mechanism is in place. So your investments are protected. Basically, that's what investors want to do. If you want to bring investments into Malaysia today, you have to ensure that your investments are protected. And that's what you have to give them the confidence. Why do I put in 100 million or 300 million or 1 billion US dollars in the Malaysian market and then I have to suffer uncertainties? You know, whether my investment is protected? No. Your investments are protected because we have investment agreement. The ASEAN Comprehensive Investment Agreement is in place. So if you invest in Thailand or Myanmar or Cambodia or Laos, for example, in Cambodia, if you're talking about, I will tell you today, there are so many Malaysian companies in Cambodia. We have the top 5 banks operating in Cambodia. Cambodia population is only 10 or 11 million. But we have Maybank, CIMB Bank, RHB, Hong Leong, operating in Cambodia. Why is that happening? It's because of the liberalization. Because we have liberalized, they're operating. It's competition. Basically, if the 5 Malaysian banks can compete in Cambodia, which has got 11 million population, that clearly shows that what an ASEAN economic community is all about. You just can't depend on the Malaysian market. Next, please. Now, in terms of transport, today I think my colleague here, Stefan, has said about transport. There are three main agreements in ASEAN. One is the ASEAN Framework Agreement on Facilitation of Goods in Transit. Basically, it was a 1998 agreement. What it means that a lorry from Vietnam coming to Thailand, passing through Malaysia, going to Singapore, that agreement says basically that lorry should be able to move freely. You know, that means it carries the good. The final destination is Singapore. That means the container will be sealed, a single seal or double seal, depending on what kind of truck you're moving. So it moves from Vietnam into Thailand right down to Singapore. Now, this agreement also specifies that they take a specific route. Of course, the route is designated because to avoid, you know, otherwise you have lorries moving across countries, they will create a traffic jam and so on. So we have specified routes. Now, this agreement allows for that. Now, the next one is the ASEAN Framework Agreement on Facilitation of Interstate Transport. Interstate transport is basically Thai lorries coming into Malaysia, or Malaysian lorries going to Thailand, or Brunei lorries coming into Malaysia, or Malaysian lorries going into Brunei, or Indonesian lorries, if you're talking about Kalimantan, Timor, Kalimantan Barat, the lorries are supposed to freely move between the two states. So this is an ideal version. I'm not saying it's happening now. That's the ideal. That's the objective of these agreements now. It is progressive. We are now saying we can't allow, we don't want to create a situation where our own lorry operators are not competitive. So there are certain restrictions imposed. But in the EU, even the EU, after 50 years, you find trucks moving. It's not so free in the EU. You know, Stefan, if I may say, they also have conditions because you have local domestic operators. You cannot allow 100% liberalization of the lorry operators because then the Thai lorry operators might be very competitive compared to the Malaysian. So these are the agreement. Now the multimodal is basically an agreement which allows for if you are a what you call freight forwarder, if you are a logistics operator, basically is under the multimodal means is door to door delivery. The guy can be registered in Myanmar, so the Myanmar multimodal transport operator will be able to bring in, say, if you're importing some household furnitures from Myanmar and she's the multimodal transport operator, then she handles the entire movement of the cargo from Myanmar right into Malaysia. All right? And in Malaysia, even her company will be allowed to operate the transport. So that's an ideal version that these people are looking at. And that's not going to happen. Of course, we have limitations in place. It will take us some time. Next. Now, to facilitate transportation goods in transit and interstate, to simplify, I think the key issue on transport is to establish an effective, efficient, integrated, harmonized transit transport system in ASEAN. I think that's what Mr. Billy Tay will be looking for. If I say yes, it's happening end of the year, I'm sure he'll be the most delighted person in this room tonight or today. But of course, there are restrictions. The ideal version is to have bullet number 3, but it is done progressively. It will take us some time. Believe me, our objective, yes, is to liberalize, but it's going to take us some time. Don't think liberalization is overnight. We can't do it. It's actually, as I said, for example, in terms of elimination of import duty, we started in 1993. We only completely removed import duties in 2010. So it took us a while to achieve that final objective. Similarly, these agreements to be truly to enhance connectivity and promote intra-ASEAN trade, it will take us some time. But don't lose confidence, lah. You know, the thing is that we have started. As I say, the formation of an economic community is not overnight. You can't remove your domestic regulations. You can't remove your existing rules and regulation overnight. It has to be done progressively so that our domestic relation businesses will be able to compete. We have to build their resilience first. We have to enhance their competitiveness. Once that is done, of course, ultimately in 5, 10 years' time or 20 years' time, we will become a truly economic community. So this is what basically the transfer next. What are the challenges we have, of course, is we have to build the infrastructure, the necessary infrastructure, both physical connectivity as well as software, as well as the hard and the soft connectivity. It will take us time. We are upgrading ports, roads and rails and airports. And you know, it's not an easy thing. You need billions of ringgit or billions of dollars to upgrade this. So we are looking at public-private sector partnership. For example, in Myanmar, I will give you an example. In Myanmar, there's a huge demand for power, huge demand for upgrading of ports, huge demand for building highways, toll roads and all that. Who is going to invest? The governments are not going to invest. We don't have the money. So it has to be done through a public-private. Of course, when you talk about the private sector, they say, is this commercially viable? If I can have a toll road from, for example, from Myanmar to Naypyidaw, but is it commercial? Is there enough traffic? You know, these are things that we have to look at. So that's why I'm saying anything we do to form an economy, it has to be done progressively. So that's the challenge we have. Of course, human resource capital, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have a full slide here because I was just focusing on STRI. For example, today, you know, there's a huge demand for engineers. There's a shortage of accountants in Malaysia, I would say, you know. I was at the accountant forum about a couple of weeks back, and they were telling me there's about shortage of accountants in the country. Most of our, not that shortage because we don't have accountants. Our accountants have actually moved elsewhere because in a free trade environment, they go elsewhere and work. They get better paid. So that's a shortfall. In fact, I would say quite a number of our guys are in Singapore, if I would say, engineers. For example, our engineers in the Middle East, it's because of salary. It's, you know, there's a demand for engineers, and our guys are good. Those who are good, who move, they are paid highly. So there's a huge requirement to upgrade human resources within the region, skills. You know, the skills requirement in this part, because a foreign investor who wants to invest in Malaysia, for example, he needs to have engineers, he needs to have accountants. So we have now looked within ASEAN to allow for mobility of skilled people within the region. We have signed 7 mutual recognition arrangements: engineering, architect, accountancy, medical, nursing, dental, surveying. So what it means that if an investor comes into Malaysia, there's a shortage of, say, a surveyor. An Indonesian surveyor can just move in. We have allowed, we have an MRA in place. Of course, when he moves in, we have to do a two-step process. Basically, he has to be registered. For example, take engineering. If a Malaysian engineer wants to work in Indonesia, he has to be first and foremost registered with the Board of Engineers Malaysia. Right? Once he gets registered, he's recognized as an engineer. So once the Board of Engineering Malaysia issues the certificate, then he can apply to register as an ASEAN Chartered Professional Engineer. So he registers as an ASEAN Chartered Professional Engineer. The Board of Engineering Malaysia will issue that certificate. Once he has the ASEAN Chartered Professional Engineering certificate or he's in the register, then he can move on to Indonesia and say, look, my Malaysian government has recognized me as an engineer. I want to work in Indonesia. They will then issue what you call foreign specialist engineering certificate so that he can move and work in Indonesia. Of course, it's a simple two-step process. But what is the advantage we have that is that he doesn't have to go through the visa. Probably the Indonesian government says they can give him 3 years, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, depending on the requirement of the particular company. So that's what it means, that the movement, mobility of skilled people. We need to really ensure, that's why it's very important for us now to ensure that we have enough skilled people in the country, because foreign investor will not come in, you know, and invest, because if he doesn't have a skilled people, for example, if you don't have Mr. Billy Yap as a man who is an expert in the logistics, they will not come because they need logistics. Logistics is so important. How do I export my product? How do I move my product from one country to the other? So these are very important aspects of ASEAN economic community. So this is where I'm saying that there are challenges. Next, please. Now, just to give you a brief overview, Malaysia, 30 million people. Now, if I'm not part of ASEAN economic community, can Malaysia really, you know, I was in Penang a couple of weeks back as well, explaining to Invest Penang and telling them basically, whatever you produce in Penang, you can sell in the Malaysian market for 3, 4, 5 months. After that, what happens? You can't produce 2 million TVs or 3 million TVs, television, for 30 million people, you know. Basically, you're a company operating and your production is 100 million. You have to export your television overseas. So the question is, Malaysian domestic market is basically very limited. We are 30 million. We are a very small market. And that's why we are actually a trading nation. You know, basically, we are a trading nation. Whatever we produce in Malaysia, we have to export. When you want to export, there should not be any restriction. So in ASEAN economic community, 620 million people is a big market for us. So we have to export. In fact, 1/3 of Malaysia's trade, 30% of Malaysia's trade is ASEAN. And we want to make sure that the number goes up. because and that's why we are removing all barriers to trade in goods, services, and investment, so that the whole of Southeast Asia or the ASEAN becomes a truly integrated single market, which means that it's not just about exporting import, but it's about the whole value chain, talking from right from the production right to the consumer. So in ASEAN economic community, it's not just about goods, service, and investment. We have intellectual property rights. Why do you need intellectual property rights? Because an investor comes, we have to ensure his innovation, his creative, is protected. We need to have competition policy. Why do you need competition policy? Because you have to operate on a fair basis. You cannot allow monopolies, 100% monopolies, to control the market. So we have competition policies. We have consumer protection. Why do you need consumer protection? Because we have to ensure that when a product comes in from any part of the Southeast Asia, we have to ensure the product complies with safety standard or health requirement. So that's consumer protection. So AEC is not just about removing import duties or removing equity liberalization. It's about comprehensive integration of Southeast Asian market, where you have all this, you know, IP competition. The only thing we are now moving, the next step, what happens after 2015, 31st December, when we announce in Kuala Lumpur, ASEAN is now an economic community. It doesn't stop. The clock doesn't stop. I'll just finish. The clock doesn't stop. You have to move beyond 2015. So we are now working on a plan, 2016-2025, a next 10-year plan. So with that, maybe I'll take my questions later on, but I think I've gone beyond 10 minutes, Sifan, but I thought I shall try to clarify. Those are numbers. I think you can get the slide. It is not a confidential document. You have the slides for your reference. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ravindran. I think this serves as a very insightful basis as to what's going to happen within this ASEAN economic community in the future. I would like to direct my first question to Mr. Effendi, who is the sales director for truck and engine Scania Southeast Asia. We've heard about the barriers that will come down. We've heard about taxation that will be changed and about the opportunities that lie within that. So, Mr. Effendi, do you need to change? Do you need to adapt your service and product portfolio in view of the ASEAN economic community?
Good morning. I'm Ruslan Effendi here from Scania Southeast Asia. I'm the sales director for truck and engine, and we operate from Shah Alam here in Bukit Jelutong. Well, it's a fair question, and we always see Asian economic community as a good platform for the rise of the economy and the more integration that we will see among these 10 countries. Since we are a business unit of Southeast Asia, it is also our interest to see this development growth that could support our business objective in the coming years. Looking at the anticipated changes, as what you have mentioned, we are looking at all activities that we can drive the business concerning our product portfolio towards the demand, the greater demand that could be anticipated out of these activities. Obviously, you know, the choices of mean of transport, choice of either vessels or going for ground transport, this could change, the landscape could change in the coming years, and the land operators, inter-countries, would also looking at gearing up their efficiency, and meaning that they are looking at increasing their productivity and be more flexible in cross-border. For us, Scania Southeast Asia, we are learning from our past experience in European Union cooperation. We are always living on a global standard, flowed down from where we came, where we come from, Sweden. So obviously our business in nature in Southeast Asia is very much governed by this global standard, and therefore we are very much ready for these challenges. Mm-hmm. So therefore the anticipated changes is actually very much in our consideration already, and it is always within our product offering strategies as well as all of our other resources preparation to gearing towards that.
So I read in between the lines that you're expecting to sell more of your vehicles and to offer a wider range of services with that.
Yes, I would confirm that.
So that's good news for the local community and ASEAN. In
I would say yes, very much. We are very much eagerly looking at supporting from in the preparation of the machine for the vehicles to be ready for this oncoming opportunities out of this AEC activities in the coming future. Yes, of course, we are looking at supporting that.
Very good. Following up on that, I would like to ask Mr. Tae, General Manager of Nippon Express, what are you expecting to happen within the next couple of months or very few years in terms of land transport? I understand that your operation is transporting goods already into Thailand as of today.
Yes, Stefan, we are doing that. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Billy T-E-E.
Sorry.
From Nippon Express. I'm in charge for Malaysia, Thailand, and Singapore trucking operations. There are also a lot of emphasis going into the ASEAN area. We have actually offices in Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, Philippines, including Vietnam, Cambodia, and I think Myanmar is coming up next. The Myanmar area and the Vietnam area are very aggressively growing. There is a lot of integrations into this ASEAN region. So as far as the whole logistics sector is concerned, we are also looking into aspect of how are we going to move trade within the ASEAN area. Our trucks can't go to Indonesia. We can't go to Philippines. We can travel up to Vietnam. So what are we going to do with Indonesia and Philippines? So we are looking into the integrated multimodal logistics of having our trucks or the trailer available on board, and our Indonesian associate will take over for delivery. I'm sure we're going to need certain licenses, but as far as the ASEAN relationship is concerned, they are looking at the aspect of multi-license. That is the area where we're looking at. When is this going to be in place? How is this going to be reacted in Indonesia and in Malaysia remains to be unseen. So actually we are in the dark of the logistic area in the ASEAN. As far as the whole thing is concerned, we are looking forward to the opening up of these areas. As it is, within the ASEAN area, so there's a lot of trade. We are having a lot of cargoes coming in from Thailand. We are delivering also a lot of parts into Thailand, extended into Singapore. That's as far as we go. Our Thailand counterpart is actually delivering quite a few cargo to Vietnam. There's also a lot of factories in Vietnam they are opening up. And they are controlling Vietnam and the Thailand sector, which will overlap into Malaysia once it opens. So, Stefan, I think we are just waiting for what is ASEAN coming to.
Okay.
And when is this market going to be developed, ready for us to go in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the question is, when can we do this?
Yeah. Yep. The topic here is on the impact that the AEC will have. Do you see that the truck driver will have to change? Will they have a different job scope? Is it as simple as just driving a truck in the future?
No, Stefan. It's going to be a lot of complications. We do not know the rules and regulation, let's say in Thailand. We are exposed to Singapore. Our trucks can go into Singapore to deliver and pick up cargoes from Singapore. We can't do within Singapore now. So it's the same as in Thailand. But Thailand is a big country. If we are in Bangkok, there is an accident happens. And what do we do? How do we get our equipment back? How do we get our driver back? What are the rules and regulations we need to understand? So our concept of looking at this will be to integrate individual country's resources. We will be able to send our trailer to the border. The Thai trucks will come and take over. Same as in the Indonesia or in the Philippines. Mm. You have to go on the ro-ro vessel. And we are in Jakarta, example. Indonesian trucks will take over. We can't send our prime over there. One, logistically wise, cost impact, your risk, your coverage of your insurance. A lot of question remains in our mind. What do we do here? So we have to integrate not only Malaysia transport operation, we have to integrate ASEAN transport operation, and how are we going to be able to manage this area remains to be seen. As long as there are rules and regulations that governs and open up our market into the ASEAN area, we should be able to plan as such. Mm. And I say, the question remains, when can we start all this? We are ready now to go into that area. When can we start this?
Very good. Thanks. I'll give that back to Scania. You've just mentioned a very interesting point. What happens when a truck breaks down? What happens when a truck bought in Malaysia breaks down in Vietnam?
At Scania, we operate in most of these 10 countries. With a different setup in nature as of now due to the country-specific requirement. For example, like Malaysia, Singapore, we own the distributorship by ourselves 100%. Therefore, we set up our own services networks. So rest assured, in these two countries, wherever your trucks are, it is our under Scania assistance program where we have within certain hours, where is as of now we are talking, we are communicating this to our customer. Within 2 hours, we will respond to where you have your machines breakdown, and it's our job to make sure that your machine is up and running and you have the highest uptime for you to increase your productivity. For the rest of other countries of ASEAN, we appoint dealers or distributors and service partners, and upon this appointment, these dealers or distributors, they develop themselves their own set of services network, and they will communicate in line with our global standard where your truck is operating. Right now, we are gearing towards very much more in integration now, a lot about languages, technical specific requirements, standardizations. But rest assured, as of today, I can assure you that if you are operating elsewhere, even in our distributors area, it will be serviced locally by them. And we are looking very much forward into this integration and what sort of other requirement we should look into in improvement so that we can have ourselves very much ready for this AEC cooperation. So, Mr. Billy, that would be very much assuring to you in the coming future. We are your partner, and it is always our goal to look at our partners' profitability and productivity at their optimum level.
Thank you very much.
I'd like a quick question for Mr. Ravindran. Sorry. Now, you mentioned that legislation needs to be adapted. I'll take a topic that most of the media members would relate to, which is the issue of overloading trucks. Now, different countries have different legislations. A truck that is within the limits in terms of payload in one country, as soon as it crosses the border, might be you become a criminal because you're breaking a local law. Which is the law that's being adopted across the 10 states? How does it work? How do you find a common ground, a middle ground?
Thank you very much, Stefan. And as I said in my presentation earlier, that's an ideal version where you have to harmonize the rules and regulation within ASEAN. That is a work in progress. You can't do it overnight. For example, you know, I think Mr. Billy and one of the issue of in the logistics sector, we have to look at, do we have a common insurance policy, for example, within ASEAN? Do we recognize the driving license of the 10 ASEAN. Do we have an ASEAN driving license, for example? In the EU, if you have, once you have a EU driving license, if you have a UK driving license, it is recognized across the 27 EU countries. You have to look at what is the permissible weight that a particular lorry can move within the region with the cargo. So these are actually, and that's precisely what the private sector, the expectation of the private sector is under the ASEAN Economic Community, we will have in place harmonized rules and regulation. And that's also our objective. That's also the objectives of the governments in ASEAN. But it's going to take some time. You can't do it overnight. So the AEC 2015 is actually a journey. We just started the process. Our driving licenses are recognized within ASEAN. At least we have that. Now, the insurance policies are not common. They have differing standards. So it's work in progress. I would say it's very much work in progress.
Okay.
Right now, if you say end of 31st December, is it harmonized? I would say no.
Okay. Thank you. Now, I have with me also Mr. Tai, who is the Group Strategy Manager of GIAB. And I find this company very interesting in this connection because it's a local Malaysian business that started out here, but is operating in 10 countries at the moment?
16. Yeah, 60.
60. So what do you think is the impact that you'll be seeing on your strategy, on your business dealings here in the ASEAN Economic Community?
Okay, first of all, I'll just introduce myself. My name is Chisen. That's why the spelling is a little bit odd. So we basically deal with performance retreads, Thai retreading. Yep. So as you know, we exist over 60 countries. Our operations in all the ASEAN countries is very fragmented. So we have our small pocket of business in Indonesia, we have our small pocket of business in Malaysia, small pocket in Vietnam, small pocket here and everywhere. So with the opening up, and it depends how fast this business is opening up, as Billy mentioned, then it will give us a indication of how should we be moving. For example, in Scania's direction of providing a Scania assistance program. Similarly, we offer same programs, not here, but in Oceania. So it really depends on how fast the ecosystem is moving. So it's going to see how the, for example, driver's license, the insurance policy, how free the trucks are moving. And this will then decide how the companies are going to appoint, for example, their Thai retreading partner and all the surrounding industry around it.
I understand tires are manufactured, coming from the Latin word manus, to do with hands. You think it's going to be giving you better talent in the future that can produce better tires?
Yeah, definitely. I think because retreading is considered new in Asia, in ASEAN, for example, and most of the road conditions in ASEAN is not up to European standard at this point. So therefore, there's a lot of misperception of products, for example, or abuse of products, or products that were not used to their original intention. Now, not to say that retreading industry, because I don't speak from like a salesperson, but this retreading is very important to help improve the competitiveness of our product. If we look at manufacturing, for example, when manufacturing is done in ASEAN at this point in time, but we must not forget that most of the technology and most of the ingredients, for example, are still imported from non-ASEAN countries, right? But they're only value added here. So when you sell it off again, you're already restricted by, for example, the cost that you cannot control or tariffs or duties that you cannot control. Right, like in Asia, for example, if you buy tires that come from, for example, China, they are subjected to very high duties, but they're still everywhere in Asia, in ASEAN. So how do we get about this? Then this is going to be the next question moving forward, and we will need to see how MITI moves on and how to address this issue.
Another question for Billy. You mentioned you go up to Vietnam. Why don't you go all the way through Vietnam into China?
Well, we have a project called SS7000. The SS7000 is from Shanghai to Singapore, distance of 7,000 kilometers. I think because of the cost impact, the China sector is quite expensive for local trucking. Yeah. So the most vulnerable area is area of growth and the area of the logistic. So Vietnam does have its trucking from Vietnam to Shenzhen. Mm. They also go directly up to Shanghai, but the volume down there is quite slow. Mm. So the majority of the volume is between Malaysia and Thailand. Well, that's where we are at now.
Okay. Trucks, how would that look like if I had to use a truck all the way from here to Shanghai? Do I need to make any amendments to the truck, or is a Scania already good to go?
As far as the product feature is concerned, then and its ability to perform as a reliable machine to transport the good within that means, the truck is ready as of today and onward without any further modification. Even we are talking about a different diesel quality at the moment, because it is adaptable from one quality to another. A few minor changes should be installed if it is required, but then it will not be very much damaging. So we can say that pretty much all our product range right now is ready for to have the job from one country to another, up even to China.
Mm. But it would help, for instance, to have the same emission standards, right?
Yes, it would very much help, so that we can go always on the highest product values. That would give the best profitability level to our customer, to the land transport operator.
Back to tire retreading, you think there will be an impact on the prices of your raw materials, rubber?
You mean at this stage in the economy?
Yep, yep.
Yes, we all know rubber prices are at the lowest point. Yeah, but again, this is uncertain because moving forward, we do not know what will be the general global demand is, because most of the tire or the natural rubber consumption is mainly consumed in China. And the economic prices for natural rubber is really dependent on China and how its movement overseas. But on tire retreading, with NR prices at this point, it also makes it very attractive to fleet operators to consider this option, because they will save a lot of money, and it makes a lot of great savings in improve the efficiency of the transport costs towards their customer. So this is going to be one competitive angle that fleet operators will be considering moving forward.
Good. I think we should take the first Q&A session before we have a small break. We will then continue with our discussion. So if there are any questions from the floor to any of the panelists, I would like to invite the members of the media now. We have a microphone over here. Any questions?
Hi, I'm Lydia from Business Times, and my question is for Mr. Billy and also for Scania. Just now you said that currently we are in the dark for the logistic areas within ASEAN, as in you're not quite sure what are the regulations going forward, moving from border to border. So how has this impacted your business? Do you see do you have extra costs in, you know, conducting your business because of this legislation not being in place?
Yeah, good morning. Basically, we are limited by our cross-border operations. Existingly, like I say, whatever that we have is not ASEAN, it's Malaysia. We can't go into Thailand with our trucks. They can't come in with their trucks. So we have actually set up a border operation at Padang Besar, where we're receiving their cargo via our warehouse. So we have to set up our own operation for loading and unloading. We also got to do custom clearance at our site. They have to do their custom clearance on their side. So this is actually in assisting now. We are not talking ASEAN. We are talking only Malaysia.
Is this a situation that's only unique in Malaysia?
No, I think so far they are all limited by their own rules and regulation of each country. You know, there's no ASEAN now.
I'd like to add on that. You are asking, is it costing you money?
Yeah.
I've had the opportunity to take a truck all the way from Kuala Lumpur to Laos. And basically, I stopped in Alostar, where you then wait for 2.5 hours for the truck from Thailand to come across. You then cross the border, and then you have another customs inspection, which takes you another hour. Now that's 3.5 hours. If you were to imagine the truck would move at the permissible speed of 80 kilometers an hour times 3.5, that's the distance that you could travel. That's the time that you would save. And ultimately, if you are doing that every day, it adds up to a lot of days, actually, even weeks. And that's a crew of 2 people in each truck. So you've got four times 3.5 man hours just waiting. Yeah, and that eventually it trickles down to the shirt, to the broccoli, to the shoes, or the bottle of mineral water that we would buy in a shop, right? Because at the end of the day, the drivers need to be paid and all that. So that is a cost. And it was mentioned earlier, uptime. Basically, what you want with trucks is you want to run them like an airline. You look at Air Asia, what they are doing is they get the planes up in the air as quick as possible. You want to do the same thing with a truck. That's when it's the most profitable. Truck standing is your worst case scenario.
But over the years, have this changed? Just now during MITI presentation, they said there has a lot of trade legislations that are going on, like borders can be crossed already. But over the years, have this changed? Have it become smoother?
To be very frank, as I said, we are not like the EU yet. In the EU, truck can just move quite freely. But at the moment, I mentioned 3 transport agreements. These agreements have not entered into force yet. We have signed, but they have to be ratified by all 10 countries to enter into force. Now, once those agreements enter into force, then some of his concerns. Right now, a lorry from Thailand will come to the border, and then physically the goods in that lorry will be transferred to the Malaysian lorry operator. So, you know, it's cost. Why, you know, for the lorry to stop there, to transfer, as he says, to take another hour or two, depending, and then you have to the connectivity, so there's cost. But under those agreements, ideally, once it's ratified and implemented, those Thai trucks actually can come straight to Seremban, for example. So, and Mr. Billy's truck, for example, if he's moving from Johor to, say, Songkhla, then his vehicle should be able to go right to the door of the consumer in Songkhla and deliver the product. Now, so it's important that, as I said, this integration process is progressively being undertaken. Now we have to wait to see whether these 3 agreements will be ratified by all countries before the end of the year and entered into force. Once it's entered into force, believe me, I'm sure many of the businesses will be very happy. Those who are competitive will be very, very happy, because there's a lot of cost saving. Not only cost, time, and the turnover for lorries to move from one place to the other.
So we're expecting the agreement to be finalized this year itself?
Well, under the AEC, it's part of the AEC measure. It has to be ratified and implemented.
To add on that, since the first session here is on the impact that we will see. Now, if you were to take the road all the way to Bangkok, you need about 18 hours constant driving, say 20, give and take, which of course is much quicker than moving goods via a ship, and it's much cheaper than flying the goods. So what one can expect to happen is that once the border crossing is made easier, more goods will be moved to road as opposed to ship. Okay? Which in itself brings another problem. I've been to Germany last year. I'm German, And the guys among us might like the idea of a autobahn with no speed limit. Doesn't matter speed limit or not, you can't move in Europe because the traffic volume has increased so much within the European Union that there's trucks everywhere, all the goods are now on the road, and it's slowing you down. So you, yes, you have the easy border crossing, but you might end up with even more congested roads. Well, it's all, and then, of course, I'm talking about day-to-day operations. Let's take Balek Kampung for the festive seasons. You have a whole other issue than at hand.
Okay. I think just to add on to Stefan, in ASEAN, we're looking at regulated, facilitated movement. It will not be free. And for the same reason that Stefan has mentioned, we have to regulate and facilitate. So that's the objective of AEC and those transport agreements.
Okay. With that, we'll have a short break. Refreshments will be served outside. Please help yourself. And we should come back in about 15 minutes.
That was the first part of the discussion. We now continue with threats and growth opportunities for the trucking industry within the AFTA. Supercool Retreads delivers excellent cost per kilometre.